This is ILTA Radio, the source for legal technology practices and ideas to help your career delivered to fit your busy schedule. ILTA Radio, get tuned in.
Thank you, everyone, for joining us for another episode of Evolving KM. Today, we are talking to Joe Davis. Joe is a member of ILTA's Program Planning Council. He's been in legal IT for 20 years, and he has just published the AI Roundup for 2018 for ILTA. Joe, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Thank you for having me. So I've been at this legal IT thing for about 20 years at small firms, medium-sized firms, and super-sized firms. And I just wrapped up a two-year project, a large corporate legal department at a big financial company. I've been an ILTA volunteer for about 7 or 8 years. I've been ECM and information management steering committees, and I've written for peer-to-peer and ILTA blogs. And so that kind of brings us to this AI roundup that I just published.
So tell us a little bit about, identify for the listeners that this roundup was published on the ILTA blog, and we'll include a link in the show notes. And Joe did a review of some of the programming that was done through ILTA around artificial intelligence. And unlike the roundup that I did for KM, if any of you are familiar with that, instead of just links, he actually includes some commentary, which is very helpful. So I definitely recommend reading this this blog post.
Well, Joe, I did steal the original idea from you. I
want you to know. But you made it much better.
I just can't resist the commentary. That's all.
Some good commentary.
They're both worth checking out. Check them both out. We'll provide links to both.
So, Joe, this is not the first time you've done an AI roundup. You've had a number of posts where you've looked at some aspects of AI, but particularly the programming. And I'm interested in, first of all, how you kind of developed this interest. But since you've done a couple of these, what kinds of trends are you seeing with artificial intelligence in legal technology?
Well, I've always tried to take a sort of a big picture perspective. I've been on the application side of legal IT. And I saw a vendor presentation that made some pretty bold claims, and I did a little bit of research around it and realized, look, if this stuff is true, if this technology can actually do what they're saying that it does, that we are actually in for a big paradigm shift. And within the past year, we've seen some use cases that do actually validate these claims. And so I think we are in for really a big shift. In 2017, so the last time I did this roundup, AI was kind of a punchline, you know, a little bit of a joke. And then we started to see the fear seep in, you know, when we started talking about robot lawyers and are robot lawyers going to come take my job. I think what we've seen in the last year, you might call it sort of a year of inquiry. I think once people got over the idea of the robot lawyer, they started to see that there was actually some valid stuff going on here. They asked for a lot of demos from vendors. They talked about it, within firms, and started asking their firms' IT departments, what is our AI strategy? And, you know, you kind of have to have one when you get asked that question. So I think there was a lot of inquiry this year, and I think firms and corporate legal departments started taking it seriously. And so I think that next year, or, you know, 2019 is really going to be a year of trying this stuff out. And I think there will probably be also a little bit of fear of missing out, a little FOMO, you know, where firms and legal departments say, you know, somebody else is doing this. I think we need to do it too. Let's go buy something or invest in some sort of technology that's going to do something, whatever AI does. And I think some are going to go in without a strategy and some are going to fail. It's still very early in this game, I think. So some will fail. I think the key, though, is that some will succeed. And I think that's the part that's really interesting. And in fact, there are firms out there who are using it and succeeding at it. And that's kind of what we began to hear about this year.
I think the concept of the fear of missing out is interesting with artificial intelligence because of so much discussion around it. And as you say, there's this fear that led to this inquiry and now this fear of missing out. I think on some of these artificial intelligence technologies, we're seeing law firms going after things more, less based on a specific use case or a specific requirement or business problem they need to solve, but we need to check this stuff out. We need to see how this works, how this fits into our environment. So you have a little bit of a shift in how people are approaching technology. So instead of saying we have a very clearly defined business problem, we're finding something to solve it, it's more of we need to explore these technologies and start to think creatively about how we can maybe take these technologies with our problems, maybe patch them together with something else and create something better, you know, presumably a better delivery of legal services.
Yeah, I agree with that. And that's something that really came through in some of the panels, particularly some of the panels from ILTACON, where if you listen to them sort of back to back, you know, one thing that sticks out is go in with a strategy. You know, yes, go in and experiment and try these things out and kick the tires, see what they can do and see what they can't do. But maybe don't do that for too long. You know, go in with an actual strategy, with a business use case that you can really use to evaluate the technologies and technologies plural, maybe multiple, you know, technology from multiple vendors. But you have to have that use case. You have to have that yardstick by, you know, with which to measure those results. Another thing that kind of came through along those lines is in order to help create that use case, to lean on your vendors, talk to them about their experiences. And, you know, so because they've been through this before, hopefully multiple times, they can help guide you in terms of the things that their software does well, or sometimes even the right questions to be asking.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. And the vendors, you know, presumably a lot of them, they have the data scientists on staff, and that's not something that's common in legal.
Exactly.
So they can give you guidance on what type of data is best, the amount of data that you'll need in order to train a successful model, how to structure your pilot, how to structure any of your training data sets, and how to do that, how to structure that project. I think those are things that law firms are not used to dealing with, right? So law firms have a lot of data. It's not always good data. It's not always clean training quality data. And the vendors should be able to help you sort of define, you know, what your data needs to look like, how it needs to look for training purposes, but then also how to, you know, step by step use it for training purposes. So one interesting thing that came up in one of the sections of your post was both the quality of the data that is being used, but then also who is doing the training of these algorithms. And that led me to wonder, do you think law firms and law departments will ever move towards having, you know, data science roles on their teams, or will this continue to be outsourced to vendors?
That's a really good question. I think we'll probably see both. I think it's really key that one of the questions that I think we're going to see in the next, you know, 5 to 10 years is the question of who trained the model. You know, because I think we're going to get to the point where the model, you know, where we're going to hear, well, the model, the AI model says XYZ, and we're going to get beyond that by having to ask the question, well, who trained the model? And I think there are some cases where the best answer to that question is going to be, you know, from a law firm, our internal experts trained the model, and they're, you know, have X number of years of experience in this field. Sometimes the right answer can be this model that was used to arrive at this decision came from our vendor, and they are the experts in this area. You know, some of the vendors out there have put a lot of time and effort not only into the technology, but also a legal staff who are training models so that law firms don't have to. So I think that's going to be a key question that we're going to hear a lot as AI sort of becomes more mainstream and at times second-guessed, sometimes rightfully so. And the question we're going to hear is, well, who trained the model? Who told the model, who told the AI engine that's the way it should think?
Mm-hmm. And there was a session at ILTACON this year about ethics and using AI in your legal practice. And I imagine that we're going to see more of that. I think that's where really the sort of like juicy issues are coming up with AI are the ethical concerns with using AI in legal work.
Mm-hmm. And I think related to who trained the model is also what is in that model. how was that model developed? What are the parameters within that model? And this is part of that evolution of our understanding of AI and perhaps our comfort level with AI, where we're getting to these questions, because first we had to kind of understand what it could do, what value it could bring. And I think there was a learning curve around the amount of data and time and expertise that's required to train models in AI. And so people just thought, well, you know, technology, you just push a button and it's there. And so we're having this kind of evolution of learning where, you know, our lawyers are starting to understand that, you know, AI takes a lot of work. And so I think the fact that people are starting to ask these questions of who trained the model or what is going into that model is, you know, in some ways a reflection of our kind of maturity curve with understanding AI.
Yeah, I mean, you know, so for example, in terms of the data on which a model can be based, it could be public data, as in, you know, here are, you know, all of this particular judge's verdicts, and here's how he or she decides, you know, on cases, and that's public data. Or it could be a firm's private data, which gets into all sorts of questions where, you know, a client of a law firm may say, well, I want you to use my data to feed your model, but I don't want you to use my data to feed anybody else's model. Nobody else can, you know, can read my data, but I will, of course, want to read everybody else's data. So
right.
All kinds of,
even if it's
interesting...
going into a model and it's, you know, it's sort of anonymized
exactly.
by being into the model and
exactly.
and so on. But then you lead to all of these issues with bias from only using certain types of data, and if you're using a firm's data but not this one large client, are you now having a biased data set from not including kind of
right.
a representative? You're already biased from looking at only the law firm data versus all of it. Yeah, so it leads to a lot of complex questions when you start to talk about the data that goes into model training and really digging into that.
Yeah, and it's interesting that the ethics session, so ILTACON had a track with four AI sessions, and the moderator, Richard Tromans, noted in the ethics session that it was lightly attended. And so
I wonder though if the ethics question, you know, and again, we're still on kind of a learning curve with this. If the ethics question just sounded a little too
dry,
lawyerly,
dry,
yeah, perhaps dry, but
right.
like, you know,
right.
ethics are what, you know, the lawyers are subject to a code of ethics, and the, you know, that's what they think about, and they get CLEs mm-hmm. for it, and you know, I wonder if people sort of equate ethics with, you know, lawyer CLEs, instead of ethics is now a key question around AI and for legal technologists.
Well, and I also wonder
what it was up against, you know, what other,
yeah.
what other great sessions
right.
was happening
right.
during
yeah,
that
yeah,
time.
Yeah, there could have been a...
what was it competing with? Well, I right. also wonder, too, so far, the ethical, again, the juicy considerations with AI so far have been around e-discovery, and more so the ethics of using or not using e-discovery technology, which is very different than the ethics with using AI algorithms in legal work. So I think that there needs to be an education to the AI using lawyer population about what it is we're talking about when we're talking about ethics with using AI.
Yeah, and I think education on not only on the ethics but the technology part and the business implications, like there's a lot of education that has to take place. And I think that assuming that we are past the, you know, a robot lawyer is going to steal my job phase, you know, we can move on to the, okay, this is a technology that we need to consider, and part of it we need to consider just like any other technology, but it is different. You know, it's the same and it's different. And so all of those things, I think we're going to hear a lot more about, hopefully, at least in, you know, in this coming year.
Yeah. And, you know, the question about, you know, is this robot going to take my job? And along with education is, while I think large parts of the legal population have gotten beyond that, I think we still are talking to people about that. Amy and I do a lot of presentations on educating, you know, educating our firm as and kind of friends of the firm around AI. And it feels like I think people have gotten to the point where they're not directly asking the question because they know maybe they shouldn't be asking that question anymore because a robot isn't really going to take their job. But you can tell that's still a concern, mm-hmm. and that, you know, people want to understand how the technology is going to fit into how they work, that this is really a supplement to how they work, that there are very defined ways in which AI can work well that you have to kind of integrate into sort of an entire workflow. So the education is an interesting one. And, you know, it makes me think of this quote that I guess has been bandied about, but doesn't have, I don't know who said it. I don't have attribution for it. It's only AI when you don't know how it works. Once it works, it's just software. So we're still in the stage where we're talking about AI, and we haven't quite, in some cases, we're starting to talk about software, but we're in a bit of a transition period here.
And it's still capitalized, right? It's big
it's
A,
still
big
capitalized.
I.
Yes, it's big A, big I. Yeah.
Well, that's true. Yeah, I mean, it is tricky because it is the same and it is different, you know, from standard technology. And by standard technology, I'm talking about technology that maybe we were once afraid of, but is now just part of, you know, the business as usual, like databases or, you know, Microsoft Word or the iPhone as opposed to a BlackBerry or at one point Blackberries and email and you know all these things, you know, that if you've been in technology, legal technology long enough, you know we've heard, oh, this is scary, and then you fast forward a couple of years and it's just business as usual. And obviously, you know, with AI we're not there yet. We're still in the you know, in the very early stages of this shift. But I think if you fast forward, you know, 5 years and 10 years, and, you know, if we could all do that, you know, look into the future, I think we will see that this stuff is a part of not only our legal technology lives, but our technology lives, you know. And I think we're seeing that some with things like Alexa and Cortana and, you know, Siri. And it's really just a matter of time, you know, before this stuff, you know, infiltrates the legal world and we collectively as the entire legal technology world figure out how to leverage it, you know, hopefully for good and not for evil, and really use it as part of the decision process, just like any other technology. So it's the same in that way. It is a little bit different though, because no matter how good you are with, let's say, Microsoft Word or your BlackBerry or a database, you know, it's not necessarily, none of those things are necessarily going to come close to forming a legal opinion, you know. AI, on the other hand, actually, you know, is poised to do that, you know, in some ways.
The scale at which it can operate and the speed at which it can make connections and reach this scale is pretty impressive. Right. And that's really what it is it is kind of patching, you know, sort of patching some things together. I think what makes it confusing as well is that there are a lot of different types of AI. And, you know, again, going back to the education, that's something we usually start off with when we talk to lawyers about AI is the press around it, particularly outside of legal tech. I feel like legal tech, we're kind of converging a little bit more. But the general press around AI talks about so many different types of things. They're talking about self-driving cars and you know, automated assembly lines and so on. Whereas in legal technology, we're talking a lot about, you know, machine learning. It's a pretty major area we're talking about.
Right. The best way that I have been able to think about it is AI, at least in this context, I think means having a machine do what you yourself would otherwise do if you had an unlimited amount of time and resources. You know, like you'd say, you know, take contract review, because that's one of the hot areas. You know, if a law firm is handed, you know, call it 1,000 contracts to review or 10,000 contracts or, you know, choose your number. You know, there are decisions made. Do we review all those contracts in order to make our decision? Do we review a representative sample? Do we review a random sample? Do we review the contracts with the highest dollar value or however, you know, however you make that decision? But what if you could review them all? Client said, did you review all the contracts? You could say yes. And mm-hmm. you would learn all the things that you needed to learn from reviewing every single contract. And we would say, well, you know, with humans, that's cost prohibitive and time prohibitive. You know, it's just there's just not enough time in the day. But with AI, that becomes very possible.
Well, I think that goes back to it's what you were saying. It's different. It's different in many different ways. One of them is the sheer amount of data that machine learning can ingest in a matter of seconds, as opposed to humans. And I think that's where the mindset around using AI in your legal practice needs to shift, where it's not going to replace me. It's going to become a really powerful tool that I can use for the benefit of my clients.
Yeah, and in terms of just to throw around some numbers, I think it was during the first ILTACON AI session, one of the vendors had thrown out the number that it had improved some contract analysis anywhere from, in terms of time, anywhere between 50 and 90%. And that's significant, you know, and that you know, when you start to think about that, you know, there's a number of questions that come up with. And, you know, things like, well, what's the economic impact of that? You know, how does that impact the business of law? You know, what do you do if all of a sudden you reduce the time that it took, you know, those 10 associates to review, you know, that X number of contracts? What do you do with their time? Which not only means what do you do with their time, but how do they bill for that time? You know, I mean, that there's some real economic impact there.
Right.
Especially when you do it, a firm does it once or twice for the client. Well, that's just becomes the new norm then. You know, there's also the question of associate training. You know, does reviewing 1,000 contracts or 5,000 contracts, is that a material part of their of learning their craft? And there are certainly, you know, arguments for and against that. You know, and others would say it's just soul sucking work, you know, that nobody really wants to do, but somebody needs to do it, you know. So all of a sudden, associates will have time to do other things. But are they going to be things the clients will pay for? Mm-hmm. And if not, how do you know, what does that do to the whole economic model for law firms? So it becomes pretty interesting. And I don't have answers to
it. Does right. And I'm not sure anybody has answers on these, because there's certainly a lot of discussion on trying to understand what the impact is and how to plan for that impact. The economic impact is certainly one where, you know, ideally what we should all move to is, you know, fixed fees, where it's a win-win for everyone. We're you know, you can do the transaction well for less money than the hourly model by using artificial intelligence, and your costs go down in the law firm. So, you know, it can improve profitability, reduce costs. It's a win for everyone. But if you're on these hourly models, and, you know, we haven't yet had that full transition that, you know, everybody thought we'd be entirely alternative fees by now, or a lot. And, you know, there's been some resistance to that. So when you do have the hourly models, how do you incorporate that? And where law firms are essentially paying for the technology, you're paying for technology to then reduce your ability to generate revenue because your revenue generating model or unit is a billable hour, then, you know, that brings up kind of, you know, very fundamental questions about the business model of the law firm, or at least I should say the billing model of a law firm, on how you do this.
Sure. One of the panelists said, you know, utilized it and said, law firms are saying, well, why should I pay money to be more efficient so I can bill less? You know,
it's the classic knowledge management question.
Exactly.
Because that's what we do.
Well, and one potential answer to that is that it doesn't have to be an all or nothing model. It doesn't have to be fixed fee or hourly. You know, it can be, this part of it is a fixed fee because we have the technology.
Right. You know, you can do something like a due diligence phase of a merger. You could do that under a fixed fee and go back to an hourly model for, you know, the negotiation and so forth. And another thing is that I think it's very tempting to think that the time efficiency and the automation of this review is going to, you know, going back to kind of the robot lawyer idea, is going to just kind of wipe associates out of the equation. And the reality is that they still need to be in there to validate what the machine is doing and to review what it's, you know, what it's seeing, what it's extracting in those patterns. You know, in particular, you have to tell the machine what to look for, and you not only have to make sure that it's looking for that, but how do you make sure it hasn't missed anything? A common question that we can get is, I want the technology to, you know, tell me if there's any red flags. You know, mm-hmm. maybe I don't want to review all the contracts, but just, you know, review it enough to tell me if there's any red flags so I know which one to look at. Well, mm-hmm. that's not really how it works. You can't just do sort of a red flag review. That requires, you know, discretion and expertise.
There's no button.
So
for
how
that.
Do you kind of combine right. those, you know, right. taking that automated portion and applying that discretion and expertise?
Well, and also, you know, along with that answer, I sometimes will say, do you actually want that? Because if you do want that, then you should be fearful that a robot is eventually going to take your job. Because if we start to give it that kind of power, then we're taking ourselves out of the equation. I would much rather be in charge of validating the machine's work and then going and doing my qualitative analysis of the data and making my decisions from there rather than relying solely on an algorithm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, who'd have thought that you know, in talking about this technology, that the technology itself actually ends up being the easy part of it. You know,
right.
the hard part sometimes
right.
is, okay, if this stuff works, well, then what?
Right. Well, that actually makes sense that the technology part would be easy because it's binary, right? It's us. We're not.
In some ways, yeah. Right.
We're
exactly.
the complicating factor.
Yeah. And you know, and let's be fair here and say that law firms can be tricky to navigate from they don't turn on a dime and, you know, they're sort of steeped in tradition and, you know, change does not generally come easy in the law firm world. So the technology part, that may be the easy part. The harder part is figuring out how to change with it. Or how to change because of it, and
well,
you know,
and
one thing. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's changing some of the business processes that are around this, the acceptance, the billable models, and so on. But you know, there's some other areas where we're seeing kind of applying a different legal services delivery model to some of our matters that requires a bit more, you know, kind of process improvement methodology and sort of sticking to a standard way to do things. And, you know, it's harder for people to make that jump than it seems like it should be. You know, the change management with how people work, they're used to conducting a matter in a certain way. And, you know, changing to adopt a new technology or process can be very difficult for them to do. And it's not that they're being, you know, ornery. It just is there is.
Well, they
you
are
know,
sometimes.
They are sometimes. But there's kind of a, you know, there's kind of a muscle memory to it, or it is like,
sure.
you know, it initially takes them, you know, you have to kind of invest to see the payoff. Like it initially is going to take them a little longer because they do have to think about, wait, I have to stop and not do it the way I normally do. I have to go to another platform. I have to do this in another way. I have to remember to write this down or whatever the technological analog is to that. So it's very, the change process is very slow.
Yeah. I think what's really going to drive it though, is the business side of things. When a client, a corporate legal department says, how come you want to charge me X when this other firm is going to charge me half that? And I hear it's because they're using AI. And I think that's legit. You know, I mean, I think the firms who are not working with this stuff are, you know, will not be able to stick their head in the sand, you know, when other firms can use this stuff and come in at a lower cost. Clients like to hear that.
Well, I'll just add a little bit to that. I would add using it well. I think there's a difference between using AI and then being successful and using it strategically and becoming, you know, using it well, becoming excellent at using it. It's not just the tool. This gets back to what you were saying at the beginning of our conversation, Joe, and it really requires strategy. And if you go in with a well thought out strategy of how you are going to use AI, how it is going to help you be successful, then you will have success in using AI. If you go in without that strategy and you're just trying things and seeing what's going to happen, I think that that's going to lead to an unsuccessful implementation of AI. And clients won't want to pay for an unsuccessful implementation.
I think that's very true. But I think, you know, I also think we're talking about two different worlds here. One is the, you know, the implementers of AI, whether that's a law firm or a corporate legal department. But the other side is the customer side. And I think that there's a very real, you know, it's the same move from, you know, away from the billable hour to alternative fee arrangements, which you know, which is what clients want. I think clients are going to say, and this is a quote from one of the ILTACON sessions where a vendor was quoting his potential customer that said, "I don't care if your technology is a ham sandwich," meaning that, which I think is just that may be the tweetable phrase of the whole exercise here. But the idea being that from a client point of view, as long as it gets the job done, I don't really care what is happening behind the scenes, because the clients talk in dollars. Mm-hmm. You know, so there are actually two sides of this, both equally important. From a technology point of view, absolutely there are significant things, you know, ethics, education, all these things are important. From the client point of view, it's really about dollars. Yeah. Well, and they don't even care about that. You know, the clients, I think, just care about reducing the cost. They don't care if you cut your fees or if you do it more efficiently or however you arrive at it. They just want to lower that cost.
Right. I think we're going to name this episode, "I Don't Care If Your Technology is a Ham Sandwich."
You're welcome.
and I think that this is in a lot of law firms, I think that knowledge management has found itself in the center of the adoption of artificial intelligence, involved in some way. And I think a lot of this is because knowledge management sits frequently between the lawyers and the technology and can help bridge that gap with how can I make the promise of this technology work with my objectives or my client's objectives or what I'm trying to do. And, you know, most of these technologies are not just kind of plug and play. You do have to really think pretty critically about, you know, your strategy and how this is going to fit in, the kind of change management this is going to take, and what kind of support you're going to need to, you know, kind of operationalize this. And that's an area where, you know, is also part of the, you know, perhaps the pain of change, where, you know, law firms are not necessarily as equipped to do that, where you have so much of this intersection of law and technology, where you need people who can kind of speak both languages to kind of help bridge that.
Yeah, and I think that speaks, I agree 100%. I think that really speaks to the idea that we talked about earlier, that AI and, you know, sort of what we might call standard technology, it's the same, but it's also different. And I think it's the perfect opportunity for the KM world, because folks who understand that the KM world are really, really critical to making this process work, because it's not just plain old technology clear whether it works or not. You know, I mean, there's a lot of gray in there.
Well, the technology may work fine in, you know, a particular instance, but to work fine for your instance as well, it may need to be configured a little differently,
exactly.
Or you may need to adapt your processes or something. It's, you know, again, it goes back to the technology is the easy part.
Right.
You know, the technology works.
It's, right.
It's
right.
Whether we can incorporate it into your process and workflow.
Exactly. Exactly.
So in your review of all of the AI content out in ILTA land from this year and a little bit from 2017 as well, do you see any sort of staffing role, new kind of roles on the horizon, either within KM or IT as related to AI and legal?
That's an interesting question. My personal opinion is that there's going to need to be, as this stuff just becomes more ubiquitous, it doesn't necessarily fit into the standard roles that we have now. However, none of the content over the past year really addressed that. And I think it's probably because it's still too early in the in the game. I think probably what has happened is that there have been some early adopters on the lawyer side, on the KM staff side, on the technology side, and these people have gotten together and done some piloting and figured out what works and really sort of gotten the ball rolling. And that's great. I think that's really helpful to get any project going. I mean, that's sort of, you know, project management 101. If you can get a champion, you know, that's great. I think that's not going to be really scalable.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're going to see, you know, because as this stuff gets used more and more, those people, you know, for whom this was a little bit of a passion project, or, you know, were able to spend a little extra time on this, it's going to get to the point where their real job, their day job, is going to begin to compete with their sort of AI job. So all that is to say, I think that we are going to see folks who specialize in this sort of thing more and more. I mean, I think we'll see it in the IT side. I think we'll probably see it in the ranks of KM and possibly even in the ranks of attorneys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah.
Are we 3 years away from that? 5 years? That I don't know.
Well, I think it's a spectrum. I mean, it's a spectrum for adoption, and then it's also a spectrum for ubiquity, and then there's a further spectrum for sort of like the maturity once it's become ubiquitous. So I think it's never going to be universal for legal. You'll see pockets, and you'll see different spectrums within those pockets.
Sure. Tune in for the 2025 roundup, and we'll,
right.
we'll address that topic.
Sneak preview.
Yeah. So, Joe, looking, assuming that we are going to see more of these roles that are focused on artificial intelligence instead of this being sort of a passion project, for people who may want to, you know, pivot their careers in this direction, do you have any words of wisdom or advice for them?
Good luck.
Good luck. Yeah. That's right.
it's tricky because there's no path yet. You know, when we look back in 2025 or whatever, we'll be able to look back and see, you know, the path becomes clearer. But for the pioneers, and I really think that they're anybody who's doing this now, we're still so early in the game that they are still, I think, truly pioneers in this area. You know, the path from, you know, the path is not necessarily clear. And I think, you know, the folks who are successful in this area, I think have a, they don't necessarily come from one particular background. They don't necessarily have to be an attorney. They don't necessarily have to be a technologist. You know, both of those things help. But, you know, I think it's sort of a team effort. So with that, it becomes difficult to say, well, you know, you should take this online class or you should read this particular book. I don't think we're quite there yet.
Right. So maybe it's an adaptability and a curiosity to be able to continue to follow what's going and what's developing in the industry and, you know, to kind of grow with that.
Yeah, and I mean, in some ways, that's kind of what I've been trying to do.
That's what you've been doing, right?
You know, as I, and you see where it's gotten me. No, I, you know, to try to take all this information in, and figure out what's real, what's hype, because you know, there's still some hype out there. I think it's getting more. Yeah. I think there's less hype and more real, but to really, you know, listen to the vendors and listen to people who are actually using the stuff, you know, in the trenches and hearing about what their successes are. One of the sessions had, I think it was four vendors, or maybe it was three vendors, and one chief knowledge officer. And all the questions, when everybody was done talking, questions from the audience, mm-hmm. they were all for the guy from the law firm who had actually had some experience with this.
Right.
So that's
I attended that session. Yeah, that was interesting. It was a pack. It was a standing room only session.
Yes.
And you're right. All questions when it came to Q&A time were directed towards the attorney or the chief knowledge officer.
Right. Yeah. And I think that speaks to the fact that, okay, we've been listening to what the vendors are saying, and that's good and that's helpful. And there are a lot of them that are doing really good work out there. But mm-hmm. what we really need is to hear from people who have done this.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I think there's a real need for that.
Right.
That
I think
certainly
too...
came out when I did the KM Roundup blog as well, that there mm-hmm. seemed to be a pretty strong trend in the last year where people wanted to see use cases. They wanted to hear about actual implementation of projects. It wasn't just, we were kind of beyond the, you know, the theory or the get me excited stage. People wanted to see things in action.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think that's going to be a trend for this year as well. People want to hear more practical use cases.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Because you can pick up things like, for example, there was one, I believe it was Richard Tromans, who had been talking to folks from DLA Piper, and they're a firm that has had a fair amount of success with this. In fact, I wrote a case study in peer-to-peer about it. And so the folks from DLA Piper, even though they, you know, by all accounts are successful with AI, went on record as saying that they feel like they're only using 1% of it. And so, you know, just think about what would it mean if they were using 2% of it, or 5% or 10%? When will we get there? Don't know, but it's guaranteed to change things. And that's the interesting part to me, you know, that it's really comes back to that idea of the paradigm shift. And that's why, you know, stay tuned, because it's changing daily, or at least weekly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. What if
you had 10 ham sandwiches instead of one ham sandwich? Think of what you could do.
The implications, yes.
Right. Well, I guess the takeaway here is that this is such an evolving area that for people who are interested in developing some expertise around AI, you're not too late. There is still a lot to be discovered, a lot to be learned, and people are figuring things out, and you can start reading and catching up. And as you suggested, talk to vendors, talk to people who've been doing things to, you know, get yourself up to speed and start developing your own opinions and thoughts on how this can be best applied to legal.
I think there's untapped use cases out there too.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, people are going to start using it in different ways. And, you know, the technology is still fairly young.
Right.
So, mm-hmm. As the use cases evolve and improve, well, so does the technology. So what isn't doable today, you know, in 5 years may actually be doable. Mm-hmm. So you know, it's a field where there's a lot to keep up with.
Yeah.
So you're saying it might be a ham and cheese sandwich.
I just want to note for the record that while I put that out there, I did not belabor the ham sandwich point. I just...
Oh yes, that's totally Gwen and myself.
Maybe that could be the title of the podcast. I did not belabor the ham sandwich.
I did not belabor the ham sandwich. Yeah.
Well, on that note, thank you, Joe, for agreeing to be interviewed by us. It was a great discussion.
Oh, thanks for having
yes,
me.
Yes, thank you, Joe, very much. This was fun to talk to you and to have an episode really dedicated to artificial intelligence.
Same place next year, same time.
Definitely.
For the 2019 roundup.
For the 2019 roundup, yes. We'll see how things have changed in a year.
Sounds good. I'll be here.
All right. Thank you.
You've been listening to ILTA Radio. Subscribe to ILTA's podcasts through iTunes or Podbean and get alerted about new recordings. ILTA Radio. Get tuned in.